Hey, Travis.
Yeah.
So it's Wednesday. The show goes out on Thursday.
Yeah.
I mean, we have to basically record in one take.
Yeah, pretty much.
With basically no editing.
This is going to be good. Let's do it.
Let's do this. Ba-na-na-na. That means you can't say, like, your crazy movie quotes or
just quoted a movie.
Or your crazy, like, you know, just saying, like, troll on, troll on, troll on over and over and over again. You just can't do that kind of stuff today.
I have ever said those words in all of existence.
We don't have time for your shenanigans today, sir.
I love that card.
Shenanigans?
Yeah.
You
Bogart
would.
Shenanigans.
You would.
Dude, it's a great card, and I took it to a Pro Tour qualifier once, and the guy looked at me and he's like, "Why are you playing with that garbage?" And I said, "Because it's going to beat you." And then he didn't believe me, and I beat him that round.
Okay. And then...
and then I did awful the rest of the tournament.
Okay. That's the point I wanted to... I was like, all right, well, so what's the real moral of this story? I defeated my one opponent the one time, and it was great.
Well,
and then
that's
I
what
lost.
He gets for not believing.
That's right. Naysayer!
Exactly.
Hey! He's Travis. I'm Samus. This is Two Trolls and a Brew. Working title is, I guess it's going to be Naysayer. Because why not?
That sounds good.
Naysayer! Subtitle this week is Working is Getting in the Way of Fun. What? Are you trying to tell me that you haven't got to play any Magic again this week?
That is correct.
Your life is sad and tragic.
Somebody decided to quit at work, so I picked up extra hours.
Yay! Extra hours! Yeah.
That happened to be on days that I normally play Magic, like Friday.
Yay! Extra hours. Yeah, that's rough, man. When you have to adult like that, it can be real tough.
Yeah, pretty much.
I avoid adulting at all costs if I can. Maybe that should be the real title of the episode.
Don't you have two mortgages and a child?
I do have two mortgages and a child.
Yeah, so I'm just way less of an adult than you.
That's true. But I'm not very good at any of those things.
What, paying them or raising your kid?
All of the above. Pretty terrible. Don't ask me how many jobs I have either right now, because it is pretty ridiculous.
Six?
But, yes, I think. I have a bunch. Trying to make ends meet, it's not always the most fun. But, that's not what this show is about, Travis. It's not about paying bills or adulting, it's about Magic the Gathering. And, so, I'm going to say, how did your week in Magic go?
Amazing. I didn't lose a single game.
Undefeated all week long. And you actually had told me what was going on, and I said, well, come up with a brew anyway. So you sent this deck. You're calling it Jund Aristocrats in Standard.
Yes.
Blister Pods, Carrier Thralls, Cutthroats, a Sifter, a Husk, Eyeless Watcher, which I don't think I like in this. Smothering Abomination, which I do. Brood Monitor seems expensive. Vampiric Rites, Evolutionary Leap, Impact Tremors. You may have me at Impact Tremors.
Yeah.
From Beyond, Outpost Siege. I don't know, it doesn't seem bad in the void. What are we putting the price on this bad boy? $87.
Online, yeah.
Is that because you have $80 worth of fetch lands?
Yep.
Four-footed wooded foothills and four Bloodstained Mires comes up with, yeah, basically your $80. The next most expensive card in the deck is Outpost Siege,
no.
Is that correct?
Yeah, Outpost Siege.
Outpost Siege, maybe Smoldering Marsh. You have two of those. They look like they're about $1.
And Cinder Gladers.
Outpost Siege are about $1. Oh, the Cinder Glades are about two. So there you go. So yeah, basically lands and a bunch of commons and uncommons.
Yeah, pretty much.
Or inexpensive rares.
I mean, you know, it's kind of like the you know, the black-green Aristocrats deck, but mm-hmm. I just didn't think the Aristocrats deck was just, like, it didn't fit me, but I liked the concept of it. So, you know, I figure Impact Tremors, just a solid card that, you know, both of us love.
Right.
Outpost Siege for, you know, the extra draw, or even when, you know, the creatures die. Because, well, I sacrificed them to the Smothering Abomination, the Nantuka Husk, Vampiric Rites, or Evolutionary Leap. It's going to hurt them either way. Plus, I'm gaining value somehow.
Yeah, I think...
And then...
I would have to try it a little bit more, but I'm not sure if these brood monitors are worth the hassle. You're spending 6 mana to get a 3/3 and 3/1/1s, which isn't the worst deal.
Right, but when you know, when they come in, they're if I have the impact tremors on the field, they're taking at least 4 damage, and then if I
sure.
use those
What's the black green rare that is a 3/3 and comes into play, I think, with 2. Do you know which one I'm talking about?
Yeah, the 5 drop.
Yeah.
Hold on, let me look really quick. I know what you're talking about. I just can't think of its name off the top of my head.
Not brood. When we get to my section of the brew report, or not brew report, but week in Magic, whatever you want to call it, my best friend came down to play for Thanksgiving, and I took him off to play Sealed Deck. And he was like, no, I don't want to. And then he, like, took second, and he easily could have taken first.
Brood Butcher.
Thank you, that's the word. And he did a lot of work on the back of Brood Butcher. That was one. He had almost all the bombs. His deck was actually really super sick. But it was, he did a lot with that Butcher on the deck. So I would see that over this Brood Monitor, like... You're getting one less mana, but you're also getting potentially a repeatable kill spell, right?
Right.
Sacrifice a Scion, -2 something, right? -2/-2.
Right.
On your turn.
And I mean, either way, is
shaves a mana off. I don't know. With the Eyeless Watcher and the Impact Tremors, I'm kind of on board.
Right, and then From Beyond, it's just a free damage every turn.
Right. No, I think it's got some potential. I've been playing the Rally deck in paper. I built it for a friend who was traveling down to play Magic with us for a... I don't remember whether it was just a Friday Night Magic or it was something slightly larger. I feel like it was something larger, like a game day or something. And so I put together the 4-color rally for him, and I've been playing the heck out of it, and it's a lot of fun. It has got a lot of similarities, but of course, you know, it's infinitely more expensive.
Right.
So this doesn't have a lot of those pieces, and I wonder if there's certain things that would be more advantageous to add. Let's just kind of hit the sideboard real fast. 3 Despises, 2 Crumble to Dust. Hello. 2 Reclaiming Vines, 4 Crux of Fate, 3 Murderous Cut, 1 Scour from Existence. Yeah, some of these sideboard choices are pretty strange. Tell me about your Crumble to Dust.
Okay, so Crumble to Dust and Reclaiming Vines are strictly for the meta here.
Okay.
Crumble to Dust, there's like 3 people that have 5-color Siege Rhino decks. You know, the Bring to Light.
Sure, I love them.
So, with that, you know, I was just like, man, I really hate losing to these. And blue is the one weakness that they all have in common. Because, you know, the Bring to Light, you know, fetches for the Siege Rhino. But then they also need, you know, the white and the black. Which a lot of the lands, you know, double up on those.
Mm-hmm.
So, it is mainly there just to stop the Siege Rhino decks. and it surprisingly works out really well. And then I figure, you know, with...
If you're, like, trying to hit the Prairie Stream or the...
Right, the Prairie Stream or...
What was it, the Sunken River, maybe?
Yeah, the blue-black one.
Whatever the blue-black one is.
Right.
So you're trying to hit the dual land because most people are only running, like, one or two of those dual land?
Right, and it makes them suffer, so, you know, they have to, you know, keep looking for another white or black source or blue source when the deck is primarily green and black.
So why Reclaiming Vines and Crumble to Dust? It looks like Crumble to Dust would be way easier to cast, right?
Well, Reclaiming Vines will also target artifacts and enchantments.
Okay.
And it also...
Well, I guess my question is just why two of each instead of just four of one of them?
Well, because Crumble to Dust only hits non-basic lands. And if you're trying to, you know, cripple them and they're already, you know, screwed out on mana, then Reclaiming Vines will also, you know, just be like, okay, well, you need this one source and it's a basic land, so I can still go ahead and kill it. Plus, Reclaiming Vines also gets enchantments and artifacts.
Well, so that adds to my point. Why not instead just four Reclaiming Vines if it's doing all the work that you want it to do?
Well, because Crumble to Dust will also allow me to look at their hand, and it will allow me to shuffle their deck.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so it gives me more knowledge.
All right, well, I kind of see that. I think I would be more inclined to just go ahead and hit one of them and not run the mix, because inevitably you'll sideboard them both in, and then you'll be in a position where, you know, you'd be kind of counting on one, and then you end up with the other, and you just end up in a weird spot. But I'm following your logic.
I figure if I'm bringing them both in, then either way it's going to be a good trade-off, because, you know, like I said, it's strictly for the meta here, and if I'm targeting one land, I'm going to be targeting it either way. The Crumble to Dust will just give me, you know, the option of looking through their deck, while the Reclaiming Vines will just give me the options of, I don't know, killing a... Oh, what's the big O-ring that they have right now?
The multi-tier O-ring?
Yeah, the one just targets multiple things.
I'm trying to think.
Quarantine Field.
Quarantine Field, yeah.
Yeah, so
I just gotten some from my son, so I don't know why it took so long to get that.
So, I mean, I could just target that, too.
Yeah, like I said, I think I would probably just run the Reclaiming Vines and go for it. I know that Conley Woods is doing a lot of land destruction decks right now.
Yeah.
That's
what I love.
I think he's even doing a 8 land destruction deck right now. Plus, I know he's doing I'm trying to think. Ulamogs also. So. Excuse me. Sorry about that. I know he's doing Ulamogs also, so he's really liking the format right now when it comes to the LD. I can't say that I disagree that much. It's been a long time since Land Destruction has been good in Standard.
Oh, way too long.
But,
you know, you're talking to someone whose first commander was Land Destruction.
Sure. So, yeah, there's no collected company.
No.
No. Only two husks, not four. I could see some rooms for some tweaking depending on what's going on.
Well, and I don't really see the need for a collected company, because, I mean, they're all just going to go to my hand instead of the field, but either way, they're going to hit the field eventually. But,
sure.
I mean, collected.
And with something like,
would just,
something like Vampiric Rites, you're going to be hopefully drawing into more, gaining some advantage, right?
Right, and if I have, you know, Smothering Abomination on the field, and I sacrifice one of the, like, a Blister Pod to a Vampiric Rites, I'm going to gain one, draw two cards, potentially deal damage, and then get a token.
Gotcha. So I figured out what the other thought I was trying to correlate was.
Okay.
There is a, I think it's over on our, one of our favorite Magic Gathering websites right now, MTG Goldfish. I think that there was a, what did he call it? Standard green-black value leap. That's what he was calling it.
Yeah, I saw that.
And he's running 8 of the sacrifice creatures, the Marauders and the Executioner. This would be a good place to put those on that sideboard, I think. Maybe even over Crux of Fate?
Yeah, I could see that.
Maybe not. I'm not sure. Like, cut the Crux, cut the Scour, maybe cut the some number of the Murderous Cuts.
Yeah, I could see
that.
Just
to be able to put those in. There's not an infinite number of creatures that care if you're... can't target them or not.
Yeah.
But, first of all, it causes you to sacrifice, which, once again, plays off of the Abomination. Gives you that opportunity to use your rights or the Leap effectively.
Also the Outpost Siege.
Sure. Also the Outpost Siege. So it does a lot of different things that I think would be good. So I could consider throwing those in as well. But, again, you're not talking about adding any real cost to the deck because, you know, like we talked about before, all the cost in the deck is in the
land,
in the fetch lands. Yep. Overall, I don't know. I'd like to see it go to action. I think I should probably invest in fetch lands. While they're still in standard, I just have that feeling like if I don't do it now, I'm going to end up paying twice as much for them in 6 months anyway.
Yeah.
So I wonder if it's worth it, or maybe I should just keep on my plan of picking up a playset of each of the battle lands and just kind of expect that value to increase after the rotation. Yeah, because they're right now the price is so low and the value is so high.
Well,
excuse me again. I just had that feeling that
I feel like
that $6 is going to go further that way.
The only one that I don't have a playset of is the blue-black one. The rest of them I have a playset already. And that was, the majority of the playset actually came from my two sealed events from the pre-release, where I got 3 Cinderglades and 3 Canopy Vistas.
Okay.
Yeah, and those... Sorry about that. Yeah, that's basically what I got out of my two sealed events with, you know, and the prize supports. I was like, well, that's good. That's great that nothing that I opened was able to help this.
Well, I get it. I don't know. Would you like to hear about my weekend at Magic?
Yes.
Awesome. So, as I mentioned before, my best friend came down for Thanksgiving, like he pretty much does every year. And this year, I took him to the shop on Friday Night Magic with the rest of my family. And instead of letting him basically sit around and work on work, I basically bought him entry into the Friday Night Magic event, which happened to be sealed. And I slapped 6 packs down in front of him, and I said, go. And basically, I just kind of gave him the quick overview of, you know, the basic themes in the format. And I told him even if all he did was open these packs and then basically quit, it would be worth it to me just to get another entry into the drawing for the card. Plus, of course, you know, grabbing 6 good packs. Well, like I said, he ended up going, I think, 3-0-2 to second place, where he went to involuntarily drew twice that I think he could have won had he had a slightly better understanding of what his cards did.
Yeah.
He just got to this weird point, like, he had the mana to kill the opponent by playing the come into play drain to life drone, dominator drone, but the problem was is that his only colorless creature got boomeranged back to his hand in response, or exiled, or whatever it was, so he didn't drain his opponent out, where if he would have instead played the, what do we call it, the brood butcher, if he would have played that first, he would have made, you know, five guys, or four guys, or whatever, and had enough colorless creatures that his opponent couldn't have removed all of them at instant speed, and he would have drained him out, and he would have won that match easily.
Okay.
Similar kind of situation, not really the exact same situation, but a similar issue happened in his other draw, where he had a victory, had he had his scene been a little bit tighter, and again, he really doesn't play Magic anymore, really, the only even close to competitive Magic he's played in 3 years has probably been a Commander decks or whatever.
Yep.
So, literally, like, no real preparation. I just kind of threw him in the deep end. And he won me a bunch of packs, which I thought was awesome. Meanwhile, I was sitting across the table from him opening packs, and I had a pretty interesting pool. Kind of a little bit everywhere. Mostly, like, white, blue, if I remember correctly, where my rares were at. And then in the very, very last pack, I opened a Ulamog and a foil Kiora.
Aww.
So, after much debating, I went down to just a white-blue control deck with Ulamog at the very, very top end. I really didn't have a way to accelerate into Ulamog. It was just kind of one of those things like, if I get here, you know, great. I think I was running like 18 or 19 lands even, because I had a big glutton of five drops.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's fine, whatever. And I won my first round pretty easily. I was splashing the Kiora off, I think, two forests. And then I sat down with my son, and the reason I debated so long is I had this really strong allies sub theme. There we go. Got to put all the syllables in the right emphasis. And I ended up, he talked me into cutting some lower quality cards in, you know, the other colors, and basically doing this really convoluted splash of green for like six allies.
Okay.
Like, so on my top end of my allies, I had the ally that, when an ally came into play, tap a guy down. I had the buyback regrowth ally that I was already playing. I had the flying X ally, so the 2/2 or the 3/3 flyer for three ally. I had a couple other allies, so they came into play, they did cool stuff, like give first strike, or I don't know, like maybe the +2/+2 ally, I don't remember. But anyway, I had about six or seven really interesting allies, plus I was already splashing for the Kiora, so I cut an island and a plains, and I went up to four forests, or five forests. Somehow I cut something else and went up to five forests. And the very next game I played, I ended up all forests and no islands, where if I would have drawn an island, I would have won the game handily. And then the next game was against my friend, and I crushed him. I curved out, and everything was fine. And then game three, I got in a situation where, once again, I couldn't draw an island. So I cut a forest, I trimmed a few more of the green cards out, and I put in another island, and my deck just continued to not fire. It was really depressing all night long, because I clearly had one of the best decks. Like, all of the card power was there, I just couldn't go. And I don't think it was a mana issue, for the most part. I just think that some weeks, your variance is such where you can't be beaten because the way the cards just come off the top of your deck. And some weeks, it's the exact opposite, and it was one of those weeks.
Right.
Where I just, it didn't matter what I drew, it was going to be the wrong card at the wrong time. Like, I had all these removal spells. I think I had two or maybe even three of the removal spells that kill a tap creature. And every time, like, I'd get value off the first one, and then I'd regrow it back with the 2/3, and then I would, you know, get moderate value, I guess, off the next one. And then, inevitably, my opponent would just play a Vigilant guy, or have a way to untap his guy at the end of his turn, and I just couldn't get rid of the big threat anymore. There was a lot of stuff like that where it just didn't seem to matter that I had the good removal or the right answer in my hand. There was something making it the wrong answer, and it was extremely
aggravating
all night long. But, you know, it's an interesting challenge that everyone goes through when they're playing Magic. So it was just one of those things that made me go, wow, this is a different night, and I definitely want to make sure that we talk about it, because it's one of those things that if you're not paying attention, you could easily be like, forget it, I'm not playing Magic anymore for a while. So it's worth the time and energy to kind of figure it out. In addition to that, on Modo, I've been playing the Ojutai's Exemplars list that we kind of brewed up, and I've yet to lose a match with it, and I think I'm somewhere in like the 12 to 15 and 4 range. I know I've lost exactly 4 games with it. And I've probably, like I said, I think I've played 7 or 8 matches, so somewhere in that ballpark. It just seems to be insane. People just don't know what to kind of deal with, because these are rares or mythics that people just don't see, so they don't know how to deal with them. And of course, that's like the whole concept of this podcast, right? For trolling people is putting them on tilt. You know, one of the best ways and easiest ways to do that is using cards that they don't expect or know how to interact with.
Right.
So, I just, I really wanted to mention that as part of the Troll Card of the Week. Mine is Undergrowth Champion. That guy has done a lot of work for me this week. Just even using a landfall triggering land like Evolving Wilds, not even using good ones like the good fetch lands or whatever, just Evolving Wilds, has been enough to basically cause people to just lose. I mean, you saw a couple of those games where they're just like, all right, well, I'll block this here, and I'm like, crack my fetch land. And then like, oh, junk rares, blah, blah, blah. And then they just scoop them up, basically, because they're not expecting something like that. And this is not a junk card. This was one of the most hyped cards before the release.
Yeah.
Like, Undergrowth Champion was way up there. And since it's not seeing a lot of play, people just don't understand how it works, and they don't understand that it's actually a very, very good card.
With the exception of the people running green-white hardened scales.
I suppose. I'm not running hardened scales at all, but I might have to add it. It's just been incredibly beat stick all week long, and yeah, I'm super impressed with it. And I just, if you're looking for a budget deck and you want to spend between 20 and 30 bucks, you could do worse than that, than my Ojutai Brew, I guess is my point.
Yeah.
Which, of course, you can get that deck list at samusgrobo.com. I know, Travis, I talked for a really long time. What's your Kroll card of the week?
It's From Beyond.
That's a good Magic the Gathering card.
Like, you know, as I was brewing with, you know, the Jund Aristocrats, I was just looking at From Beyond and other rares in, well, Battle for Zendikar. And I was like, this has potential for a stupid combo with other things as well. You know, with like, because it's just going to constantly pump out creatures unless they destroy it. And then I was thinking about Tomb of the Spirit Dragon with it. And then the spawning pool or breeding pool or something, whichever one that makes the spawning bed.
Spawning bed.
Makes the three extra dudes. I mean, just just with being able to ramp with creatures without them, you know, having any sort of effective removal against it, since you can just sacrifice them for no reason. I feel that card can also just, you know, destroy things late game.
Yeah, this ability to tutor up an Eldrazi card might be real good also.
Yeah, and that's where the destroying things comes from.
Sure. I mean, we've already seen it. Like, you play one of these guys, let it sit there for two or three turns, tutor up your Ulamog, sacrifice all your guys to play your Ulamog, right? Like, we've already seen that. But, I mean, there are other Eldrazi cards. I actually played a guy, I think maybe Tuesday? I don't know. There was a day I was supposed to stream, and I didn't because I wasn't feeling very well. And either later that day I jumped on for, like, a match or two. Or maybe I played with Remington. Yeah, I think I played with Remington later that night. And there's that 7-5. I can't even think of what it's called off the top of my head. But it's the only one that actually has the sacrifice or exile two permanents when you attack clause. And they used From Beyond and it to really good effect against me in that game. And it put me in a situation where I had to trade with it. You know, I had to, like, sacrifice a land and sacrifice something else. And From Beyond just put them right back in the game. So I think it's an underappreciated card, and for, like, the dollar, I think you should just pick them up. For $2, you just pick them up.
Yeah.
Even if it's not the best card in the world right now, next set it'll be much better, and I have the feeling that it'll be quite good in the next few months.
I feel it's going to be good. And if someone can figure out how to break it with Emrakul, then I think it'd jump, but I don't think anyone's going to try and do that with Emrakul since it's already pretty stable with where it's at. But I think it'd just be there for, you know, fetching them out.
Yeah, it makes me wonder if there's a way that you could use it in Modern to really get ahead, and I'm not sure. I just don't think there's enough Eldrazi cards out there yet. I have the feeling that we're going to get some really, really good ones next set. Although, is the Colorless Wrath, is it Tribal Eldrazi?
Colorless Wrath.
What is the... It costs 7. It blows up everything that's not colorless. From the last Zendikar block, I think. What is it called? I don't remember either. Dust, something to dust?
Return to maybe? Dust?
Return to dust? I don't know. Quickly. It is not Return to Dust. I don't know. I have to look for it. Oh, because it's not supposed to be in standard, you dorkus.
No, Return to Dust.
Yeah, it's not it. That's not it.
Anyways.
I'm pretty sure it's got dust in it. But anyway, yeah, I think there's a lot of potential for it, and I think when the next set comes out, we're going to see a huge number of Eldrazi cards. And I think it will really have a huge effect in multiple formats, including this one.
Right.
Speaking of modern, though, a deck that's been on my mind is this Cheerios deck, and I can't tell you the first time I saw it. And it's not the exact list that we pulled up here. This one is the Pure Steel Paladin Monastery Mentor version, using all the equipments, the zero casting cost equipments, to kind of go to work. And I really love this list, and I think it's pretty awesome. But this isn't the first list I saw, but I do think this is probably the better version. And I guess my point is, the reason it kind of has come up in my mind anyway, is potentially adding Molten Nursery. Especially with something, like if you don't have your Monastery Mentor, or for whatever reason, you can't get the Monastery Mentor running, that gives you another 3-drop that essentially does a similar thing?
Well, instead of dropping a dude, it just gives you damage.
Correct.
And with all the colorless spells in this deck, I count 4, 8, 12, 16, 24.
Not to mention, if you were to run, some number of these. Yeah, I think it could be quite good.
Yeah.
And they do chain off of each other, so if you were to draw a second one, obviously it would be more. Anyway, what we were talking about was that this deck, mostly because of the mana base of Modern, which you're going to hear that a lot from us, is the mana base is where you're going to be spending your money. Although Monastery Mentors are a little bit on the pricey side right now. Looks like they're $13 online, and they're creeping up, probably mostly because of the Legacy play that they're seeing right now. Looks like if you would have bought them last week, they would have been as low as 8 tickets.
Yeah.
Which, again, this week, the Super League is back, so they're getting a bit of a spike. But I think this deck is a good one, and it's got a lot of potential, and I think you could easily tweak it with something like a Molten Nursery or perhaps an Impact Trimmers could go in. Something that, as you start to combo off, it kicks the number of cards you needed to combo off in half. And something like a Molten Nursery or an Impact Trimmers.
I don't see Impact Trimmers... being effective unless you have the mentor. If you don't have the mentor,
correct. My kind of thinking was play the affinity-esque creatures. Maybe by cutting the Monastery Mentor, running like a slightly heavier green or a blue red version.
Okay.
And using what's the guy? The Kozlik's Harold of Kozlik?
Yeah.
Something like that to keep the cost lower. And something, again, like Molten Nursery, Impact Trimmers, to kind of go at it. Especially if you're running things like, any number of the already popular Affinity deck stuff out there, right? If you have a lot of that stuff already. Not that you necessarily need to add the combo, some sort of combo kill to your affinity list, but if you could shave a turn off or give it that extra push that it doesn't have, right now, for example, like game 2, they bring in Rest in Peace? Is Rest in Peace the one that you can't activate your enchantments or your artifacts?
No, Rest in Peace...
What's the one that says you can't do the artifact stuff? You probably can't think of it either off the top of your head.
I have the card here. Well, here, when I say here, I mean in the stack. But it's white,
Also costs two.
Yeah, it costs two mana. It's an enchant. And
it doesn't super matter, but my point is that we could, if they were to play that and that's their way of basically killing you, or if they're using something like Kataki, it gives you a way to push through even though they're shutting you down hard. And I like that.
It's called Stony Silence.
There you go, Stony Silence. Thank you. I knew it was something Silence or Rest in Peace or something.
Rest in Peace and Stony Silence are nowhere near the same card.
But they go in the same deck sideboards.
No, they don't.
Yeah, you do. Like, if you have access to white, you definitely run them both. Right? Rest in Peace. One of them exiles all the cards in the graveyard.
And the other
and
one
then the other one shuts down... or the other one shuts down artifacts. Yeah, they both go in the sideboard of the same decks. It just depends on what you think is going to be floating around, to what degree. But if you're playing white and you're looking for sideboard answers against stuff that you can't answer, you definitely need them both.
Yeah.
I stand by that. If I'm wrong, tell me at Samus Garobo at Twitter. You tell me on Twitter. Like everybody else.
All right.
But I'm pretty sure you run them in the same deck sideboard. Not for the same deck, that's different, but I think you put them both in the same deck sideboard.
Oh, remember the dust thing that we were trying to figure out?
Yes.
It's all is dust.
All is dust. I knew it was something dust. Is that Tribal Eldrazi?
Yes.
Okay, so you could potentially use that to tutor it up. So... does that become worth something in a like a Tron list, maybe? Like the green Tron, could they run that to go tutor up an Emrakul and to go tutor up a Allin's Dust?
Yeah, I mean, it could be a thing, because, I mean, you're obviously ramping and, you know.
This also gives you a creature every turn, theoretically helps you ramp.
Right.
Gives you some extra avenues of attack, like in, specifically, again, like a Tron deck. But, yeah, I think that card's got some potential in some other formats. It just needs somebody to kind of put some effort into it.
Right.
Anyway, this last comment on the Cheerios deck, it's $126 online if you were to just buy it all from cardhoarder.com, which doesn't seem like a bad price to me. Especially when you consider, again, everything comes down to the mana base. A Sacred Foundry is $4. Mystic Gates, which you could probably get away with a different land. But they're 5-ish apiece. Hollow Fountains are 10-ish. Glimmer Voids are the most expensive. At around, what is it, 12-ish dollars each? No, that's not right.
$8.
$8. Gonna say 17 divided in half. And then the 4 Flooded Strands. So, like, the mana base is where a lot of the money's at. And I think you could do some work to make that a little bit more budget. And then, of course, the mentors, I think, just do a lot of work. I have seen some people try to use some other kind of effects. This deck's running one Grape Shot. I kind of like a second Grape Shot. We also talked about how I don't really like the Nauseous Revival versus something like another Grape Shot or another Echoing Truth in the main. But I don't know. This is on my mind again, trying to figure it out. I wonder if I have some modern tournaments coming up on my radar, and that's why I'm mulling it around. I don't know. Or maybe I just want to have the ability to play some other formats.
I always like having the ability to play other formats.
Yeah.
I just get bored doing the same stuff over and over again.
Well, that's why I'm such a heavy drafter, right?
Yeah.
And a sealed player. But that being said, I have the mono green Eldrazi ramp style deck that my son plays whenever we play a modern tournament. He really likes it. Usually does pretty well. And of course my local metagame's just full of freaking boggles everywhere I look. So this deck may not necessarily be good enough to beat boggles, I don't know. is an interesting question. So anyway, there's something I want to start talking about, and we're getting to about the 45-minute mark, so I want to squeeze it in and then still have time for the game. But something I'm not real sure how we're going to exactly give it a cool name or something, but I want to talk about leveling up your troll. And in the other podcast, they call this leveling up, so it's kind of where we're using this mindset from. But recently I was at a PPTQ helping to judge, and I was watching, the last couple rounds, and I sat down between a couple of guys and was watching them. And a guy would attack with the infiltrator. I forget exactly what it's called. The
Infic?
One. Yeah, there you go. The 1/4 that's unblockable and does an ingest. And the guy would attack his opponent, and he would say, take one. And the opponent would update the life totals for both players and then put his hand on top of his deck waiting for his opponent to say, ingest one. And almost inevitably, the opponent would start to say, done, or your turn, or something. And he would say, and ingest. And his opponent would go, oh yeah, and ingest. And he would ingest the top card of his library. Which I feel was incredibly well sportsmanlike, but completely unnecessary. You do not have to remind your opponents of their triggers. And actually, I have found where it kind of borders on good intentions that you do remind people of their triggers, so they kind of get that mindset that you're going to remind them of things, and then you stop. Have you ever done anything like that, Travis?
Yeah, and it's mainly out of, like, when I'm not at a tournament that matters.
Sure.
You know, I kind of have a habit of doing it because, well, I mean, I've been playing for a while, and, you know, I tend to go against people who are less experienced and they miss triggers, so, you know, it's just always out of a habit to say, hey, also this thing, and then, you know, it's more, and it's more for, you know, new players or when a new set comes out, it's just kind of a reminder of, this needs to happen. You know, don't forget, since this is the deck that you're playing.
Well, and I think the level 2 that I was working with at the time, I think he said it the best, in my opinion, was if you want your triggers to happen, put them on the stack.
Right.
And it's just one of those kind of things. And specifically, when you're doing it with a new person, that's different, right? Like, you're reminding people of what's going on. But at a higher level competition tournament, say like a PPTQ or, I don't know, that's like the biggest thing around here that I bother going to, potentially like a GP or like maybe the regional, there's quite a few times where I have used that trick where it's on that same level as picking up your pin when somebody attacks you, even though you know you're going to do a block, or you know you have some sort of response to do something, and you're trying to, like, trick them into committing more than you want.
Right.
It's a similar kind of thing, right, in my mind.
That's more where, the mental game of Magic.
And I think that's exactly the comment I'm talking about. Especially for somebody who clearly forgets their triggers, right? Like, you give them a couple of chances to start remembering on their own. And then, you know, if they don't remember something important, say like, okay, so you ingest one, you ingest one, you ingest one. And you get to the point where, let's say they pack you, right? And then you don't remind them about their pack. And then they draw their card and you're like, judge!
Right.
Didn't pay his pack. Like, well, I thought you were going to remind me. Like, well, dude, I don't have to remind you, but you reminded me about these things. Well, you know, I chose to do that because I was, you know what I mean? It's just like drawing a card, or not drawing a card, but like a scry or something, with like a Thassa or something like that. Like, you can get a lot of value, put your opponents on tilt with proper use of reminding or not reminding your opponents of their own triggers.
Right.
Of course, your triggers you need to remember and keep track of and announce.
Well, that and both players need to remember global triggers.
Right.
But other than that, like, if it's not at an FNM or, you know, something like just a casual Saturday tournament or whatever, then I don't remind them of anything. Like, I just play the game like I'm completely oblivious to what they're doing. And then if they happen to, you know, just get casual with it, then that's when, you know, you start just, you go with it. If they miss stuff, that's their issue.
See, and I think that's a valid opinion, but I like that little extra value of trying to get them used to me being there to catch them so they get a little bit more lenient, and then you stop.
Okay.
You know, like, once you get them relying on you to remember certain things, and then you stop reminding them of those things, then you get a lot of extra value there.
Right.
Maybe not. Maybe that only works in my mind, but I have definitely seen that happen. I've also seen people get really lazy when they're announcing their triggers. For example, an individual was using one of my favorite cards, the Monastery Mentor, and he played a spell, and he pointed at his Monastery Mentor and went Prowess Trigger, and then resolved his spell. And then after he was done resolving his spell, he tried putting his 1/1 Monastery token into play. And his opponent's like, no, you announced your Prowess Trigger, and then you resolved your spell. You didn't say anything about your other trigger. You just could have said Monastery Triggers, or you could have said Triggers and pointed to your card. But that's not what he did. He specifically said Prowess Trigger.
Right.
And so let that be a lesson for those of you out there listening. Be extra careful with those kind of things.
If a card has multiple triggers.
And it's got multiple triggers, be generic if you can. If you can get away with being generic, then you can, you know, it gives you a little bit more leeway if something were to happen. In this particular case, I was standing right there as the judge. I'm like, sorry, man, you announced the Prowess Trigger, and then you resolved your spell. Like, there's nothing I can do about that. You missed that trigger. And it put him right on tilt. So, for the rest of that particular game. And the rest of the tournament, I heard him say both triggers. He announced both triggers individually.
Right.
Which I think is a good thing. But I think at the same time, if he just would have went monastery triggers, he would have been able to get away with it just as easily. And I don't know if there's another card right now in Standard that has two triggers or not when they enters the battlefield or does something. But
I mean,
I'm sure there is.
Retreats.
Sure.
You know, you have to say which trigger happens because you get one or the other. I guess.
Right.
Anything that's a choose one.
I'm sure there's another Prowess Trigger out there that people might play, like Prowess Trigger, everything also gets flying or something. But yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I just, you know, it's a good thing to keep people in mind or whatever. All right, so we're also going to do another new game for us anyway, a MFK, Marry, Frack, Kill, right? Because we can't say the other word because we're still PG-13.
Yep.
And we might have to change these around for us in particular. But basically the idea is who you would take home for a night, who you would take home forever, and who you want to give a 27 trimester abortion to. You're supposed to laugh. That was funny.
Well, I was just trying to think of how many years old that would be.
Very old. Very, very old. So,
very old.
27 trimesters? That's pretty old.
I don't think so. 3 trimesters is 9 months.
That's correct. That's what they mean by trimesters, 3 months.
Just be a 9-year-old.
That's pretty old.
Why would you be thinking about fracking or marrying that person if they're 9?
Well, I mean, Muhammad did it.
Well, yeah, but let's not get into that. That's something
just,
we don't want to deal with.
I'm just saying, all role models, right? Anyway.
Like 54 so months. 54-month trimester. That's when they're 18.
Okay, so 54 trimester
abortion.
Person. Okay, so our options are Paradise Mantle, and you wanted to be very clear about the artwork. The artwork is what you're judging.
Oh, yeah,
on.
Definitely.
Cure the Waste and Smothering Abomination. So, Travis, noodle this out for me, buddy. Who is your lifelong companion of these three cards?
That would be the Paradise Mantle.
Okay. You're going to settle down long-term with the feathered cloak?
Yeah, but
on the sweet
specifically
elf.
The one from Modern Mirrodin, Masters.
Right? Oh, I think that's the Mirrodin printing,
is
too.
Is it?
I think it's the original. I don't think there's new artwork. I think it's all the same artwork. But yeah, that's a little bit of a hottie. Cute little elf. All right, so who do you just take home for the night?
Secure the Waste.
So you're into the camels?
What?
And my Muhammad joke was out of line? Secure the Waste has got like 8 camels on
it. Yeah, but it also has multiple people on it.
Oh, so this is your potential origin.
Yeah, I mean,
you were talking about.
The X makes it, you know, an unknown number. So you're either going home by, you know, with yourself for the night, which, I mean, we've all done that at the bar. Or you're going to end up having an orgy, so.
I don't think I've ever gone home alone from the bar.
Have.
I don't think I've ever gone out to the bar, though, to be fair. So you're going to kill this poor smothering abomination?
It's already smothering itself with its face. Look at that thing, it's hideous.
That seems uncalled for. So I'm going to mix things up here just a little bit. I think I kill. I don't know. I think I kill the Secure the Waste. Right? Like, I don't need 10,000 camels in my backyard. I already have enough problems trying to keep the neighbors from calling the police about my 5 dogs. Or 3 dogs or whatever. So, I don't need that. I don't need Secure the Waste. I don't need all those people coming over on their camels all the time. I think I'm going to take the Paradise Mantle home for the night. Like, I think she looks cute for the one-night stand. And I want the Smothering Abomination to smother me for the rest of my life. Like, either choke me straight out or just, like, take care of me all the time. Like, do you need something to eat, dear? Do you need a foot massage?
Too bad you're dead.
No,
here,
no,
eat this
no.
Pillow.
I just want to be able to scream, oh, give me 5 seconds to myself, you're smothering me. Like, I want that 24/7 attention. That's what I'm looking for.
I hate that. Like,
I just want constant pampering. I want this to be the smothering pampering abomination.
I want people to leave me alone.
And then, let me just look here real quick. See if I can find some good artwork. Here we go. So, not sure exactly where it's headed. It looks like it's probably like roaring back in climax. So I'm assuming there's a hole on the top of its head.
So it's like a dolphin.
A yeah, really something like that. Although,
dolphin.
What is it ripping apart? And are those supposed to be entrails?
It could be ripping apart a scion.
It's got, here's an arm, there's 2 legs. I don't understand what it's ripping apart. Like,
probably an Eldrazi scion.
I get, maybe.
I mean, they're not really known for being friendly, so
I guess
cannibalism
that's true.
Wouldn't be out of the question.
I don't even see any teeth. Better yet, no
mosquitoes
teeth, Travis.
Don't have teeth, and they still suck.
I suppose that's true. I guess that's where I was going with this, is that there's no way for it to bite you.
I mean, sometimes
now, I'm a big
marks
fan.
Good, though.
No, thanks. No, thanks. And what are these little things coming out from what I would assume is a neck? Like these little pincer things? Are they extra arms? Do they have hands? Are they just there to stimulate the prostate? I don't know. But I'm on board. That's what I'm saying. I think it's cuter than it lets on. I think we can enjoy a wild evening or lifelong of marriage with the smothering abomination.
I mean, you're gonna have to start getting into some real serious stuff that you just don't even know exist right now.
Maybe. Like, I really wanted to do the Apostle's Blessing. Like, I thought that would be a fun one, but Travis is all like, no, no, no. What is that card even? I'm like, it's a hot chick wearing a full body outfit. No, no, no.
How do you know it's a hot chick?
I don't know. Look at the breastplate, my friend. Look at the breastplate. All right, folks. Well, if you, like Travis, is now Googling...
I have the gatherer open.
Apostle's Blessing. Trying to figure out if it's a she or a he.
I don't think that's a she. Yeah,
go ahead. Go ahead. And while you're doing that, why don't you visit samusgrable.com for this episode and past episodes, as well as my sporadic occasional writing. I would appreciate that. You can also visit, us on Twitch. I'm Samus Garobo. He is TurtlePower319 on Twitter. I'm Samus Garobo on Twitter. And, of course, you can send us an email at twotrollsbrew@gmail.com. We appreciate all those kind of emails and tweets and whatnot. It makes it a lot easier to do the show when you get some feedback letting you know you're on the right track. Travis, fill for like 2 seconds while I make sure we didn't get a new email.
To me, it just kind of looks like on the Apostle's Blessing that the midsection, you know, like underneath the breastplate to the abdomen, that just whole area right there is just missing. So I don't think it's a female. I just think it's a really messed up breastplate. Because it's just the top part that looks like breast.
No, I'm pretty sure that's a bikini breastplate, and those are
sure that wouldn't give anyone protection from anything.
Well, it's
I think you're just promoting.
People are attracted to the shiny bits of the armor, and that's where they stab their sword. So by reducing...
Well, and that's
right,
why
reducing the shiny
doesn't
parts,
have the yellow belt anymore.
Correct. But reducing where they want to strike by only putting the shiny parts there is a good sign. That happens a lot.
Well, yeah, but that's...
So, I think this is a hot chick.
I'm not thinking
I wish
so
I read
all.
The books through this story. I'm pretty sure it's a hottie.
I think you're wrong.
I don't know. The best part is she's wearing a mask. I didn't never know.
Well, you would know as soon as you took her pants off.
I mean, the whole idea is that she would stay in her outfit.
Well, then how would you frack it?
I think that there'd be a lot more involved than normal stuff. I think there'd be whips and chains and all sorts of kinky stuff involved.
I don't think so, because...
Look, Travis, there's no difference... Never mind, I don't want
to
go there.
Okay, so I'm going to go to...
Don't want to go there?
I'm going to go to Pinterest 13? On this.
Okay, you do that. Just keep in mind, to quote a Disney movie, there's no difference between a barmaid and a queen in the dark, except one is less practiced in the art of massage. That's Porthos from the Disney's Three Musketeers.
I really doubt that we should actually quote Three Musketeers for something good.
I like that movie
a lot.
I mean,
all of the Three Musketeer movies were good, but I don't think we should just quote it for the Disney version.
Was that in all of them, though?
No.
That particular quote?
No.
Well, that's the one I'm quoting.
Why would you quote it specifically from?
Because that's where that quote's from.
Yeah, but you shouldn't quote something based off of the dumbed-down child version of it.
I wasn't. I was basing it off of the off of the sweet quote about being no difference between a barmaid and a queen in the dark, except one less practice in the art of massage.
It's you shouldn't be quoting child.
It was a sex joke.
I know it's a sex joke, but
it was great.
It was poorly written.
No, it was
I'd
not
say
poorly
that
written.
It was by Disney.
I could be wrong. It may not be Disney. I'm looking right now. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. All that matters is Oliver Platt was the man.
Oh, well, see, that's the wrong Three Musketeers.
No.
Yeah.
It was amazing. I love that movie.
Eight different ones. Like, Man in the Iron Mask was a better Three Musketeers movie.
That movie was retarded.
Yeah, but it had Leonardo DiCaprio.
Threw his sword like 80 feet away through the waterfall and stabbed the guy with the pointy end.
Yeah, because that's what the Three Musketeers do.
No. That's not. Alright. I think you're getting me on purpose. This is not what Three Musketeers do. This is not a thing. I'm almost positive. Almost positive. Anyway, folks, thank you for joining us. That's all we have for this week. Join us next week for all sorts of exciting things. Check us out on Twitch. I will be streaming a Makeup Magic Day because I was sick on Tuesday, so tomorrow I'll be playing Magic, which will be the same day that this podcast hopefully comes out, so you'll be able to either catch the replay at Twitch or you can jump over to youtube.com/SamusGrobo and check
tomorrow I do.
We'll see what happens. Maybe Travis will join us for a little bit tomorrow. Anyway, doesn't matter. Go on.